Great. So welcome, everybody. This is RM101, which is the long word for it is Managed Risk in Rural and Remote Communities, or we can just call it Managed Risk. And I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting this call from the traditional territory of the Kwangundun First Nation and Tonkwatchin Council. And one thing that I just found out that I can do with these calls is if you guys have a question or want to say something outside of the flow of our circle, if you press star 2 and you're on your phone, you can actually, it raises your hand by your phone number, and then I can say, hey, did you want to have something that you wanted to share? So go ahead and try the star 2 if you want to, and star 2 puts your hand up and puts it down. And then, of course, on your computer, you're able to just hover over your name and put your hand up as well. So, Kumanopic, no problem. I did hear Don told me you guys are out of ink on your printer, so that's okay. We can just always chat through things. If you're not able to print it in front of you, that's absolutely okay. I understand. But thanks for reminding me of that. So this learning event is one of three that we have that start with RM that are risk management. And this is the first of those three. Hi, Trista. I see that you just joined the call and you're in the chat. So welcome. We're just getting started. So the concept of risk management can be a little overwhelming sometimes for us in recreation. Often it's difficult to know where to start and how to tackle issues and concerns. So our learning events have been designed to help you sort of fulfill your responsibilities so that you can make sure that you're careful with anybody who comes in and uses your facilities, including outdoor spaces, or who participates in your program. I know, as I mentioned a little a few minutes ago, where you live, you're used to risk and you're used to doing it all the time, but now we have to put that into a work context or a program context. So as you might have seen if you looked at the presentation slide, slide number 5 encourages you, tells you that this learning event will get us to start to value the process of managing risk in community recreation. It will help you to identify and also assess or rate the chances or probability and the severity, the how bad something might be in different risks. And we're going to look at a process and some tools that you can use to manage risk in 5 key areas. So let's start today with some introductions. When you introduce yourself, I'm just going to ask you to say your name and your community. And then I'd like you to share something that is what's called a sweaty palm issue. So imagine kind of the hairs on the back of your neck stand up, you feel a little uncomfortable, your palms start to sweat because you're in a situation that doesn't quite feel right. I've been in that situation on my bike when I run into a black bear on the trail because the black bears are not very predictable. But I've also been in that situation in recreation when I've taken a group like down a ski hill or something and all of a sudden the terrain changes or the weather changes and I feel like something bad could possibly happen. So that's your sweaty palm issue. So I'm going to ask Jed just to think about what yours might be while I pop the question into the chat. And I just shared a couple with you as well. So we're going to start with Jed and then Gokian, Peter, and then Nathan, Isabel, and over to Aglulik, to Trevor and to Monopic, and then Tristan, and then Sherry will come back to you just so you see how our circle works. So, Jed, over to you. Could you introduce yourself, your community, and tell us maybe if you have a sweaty palm issue or something that makes you a little nervous, perhaps with some of the outdoor programs that you lead?
Hi, I'm Jed, and I'm from southern Yukon town of Teslin. When I'm doing programs, probably the thing that makes me the most anxious is dealing with teenagers that may or may not want to actually be there.
So teenagers that may want to be there might be a little easier than the ones that might not want to be there because they might not follow the rules or anything, right?
Yeah.
That's probably something that other people experience too. Thanks, Jed. Deanne, let's go over to you. You're next, and then Peter, then Nathan.
Hey, everyone. Good morning. This is Deanne from Squash Recon. So city farm issue for me. I work at the Better Bodies. It's a gym, and squash courts are located inside the gym. So whenever my the juniors, the kids, they walk to the gym, it's always scary to me. So I always feel like there are the barbells are there. Some of the kids might hit with the head, and the kids are just they just run around, right? So it's always like I have to be very, very precisely careful with that. That's a pretty pump for me. Yeah.
I can imagine that, because that equipment has sure passed into the Better Body space. So thanks for sharing that, Deanne. Over to Peter, then we'll go Nathan, and then Isabel. So Peter, can you introduce yourself, and if you have one, share a sweaty palm issue?
Hi, I'm Peter. I'm the director and coordinator for the Recreation and Park Association of Yukon on the Whitehorse. And one that comes to mind is I also work at the Canada Games Center in the gym as well. And I often see people ego lifting or lifting a tremendous amount of weight when they do not have proper technique or form. And it looks like they're going to seriously injure themselves. But I never know what to do because they don't like unsolicited advice either.
That's a challenge for sure. A good one. That would make me a little nervous as well. So thank you for sharing that, Peter. Okay, we're going to go to Nathan, then Isabel, and then over to Glulik. So Nathan, if I muted your phone because I so you might let me just unmute you. There we go. So over to you, Nathan.
Okay. The only thing I can think of was when I'm fundraising or something. One day I was holding a bingo event, and we were having technical issues with all the ATMs in Baker Lake. So there was no cash. So there was no bingo sales, no Nevada sales for about three quarters of the day. And then the technical issue cleared up, and then everyone came at the last hour, and I was able to break even. I was thinking I wasn't even going to be able to pay my winners. But yeah, it was a technical issue, and I couldn't get cash in town. So it was
That's
kind
a
of scary.
Bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
So Nathan, just for Sherry, who's new to our group, you're the recreation, is it manager, director, coordinator? What's your title?
Yeah, I'm Nathan Nonono, and I'm the recreation coordinator for Baker Lake.
Awesome. So technology is something that we don't have a lot of control over. So risk management, you'll see that's where backup plans come in. So yeah, I can see how that would have made you very nervous and worried that something, you know, especially if you got to pay out of pocket, things that you can't cover. So thank you, Nathan. Okay, let's go over to Isabel, and then Abulik, and then Trista, and then Sherry.
Thank you, Carolyn. I have been very lucky to work in very different work environments, in most of them juvenile crisis and group homes and things like that. So I had many, many sweaty palm situations. But if I want to keep it close to the recreation kind of situation, in one of my first leadership position, I think it was the first time I was actually a coordinator for a summer camp on a remote community led by a local First Nation. So we were about, I'll say, 4.5 hours away from Whitehorse, and we planned to take everybody for a town day. We had like a CGC plan, we had a field games, so we had a whole day plan. And the first 2 hours of our travels towards the Whitehorse, we had a flat tire on the van. And it was quite a dramatic flat tire. It really popped really loudly, so the little people that were inside the van got really scared. So there was 15 of us, myself and my assistant. But everything went super well. You know, we had a spare tire. We put the spare on. Someone stopped, gave me a hand. And I was able to get back on the road and then phone the property management people of the First Nation 2.5 hours away and tell him, so this happened. But everything's okay. We're on the way. Can you just hook me up with a new tire? When I get to the guy was just mind blown that, wow, you did so good. But it was a little, a little sweaty palm when everything happened and the kids were scared and crying. And yeah, so it was fun.
Yeah. Thanks, Isabel. And for those who don't know, you're in Haines Junction in Champaign-Nazac. First Nation traditional territory, right? And I totally agree. Transportation, especially when you're transporting children or youth, can be really, really challenging sometimes. And you throw in weather and all sorts of things, and it's pretty tough. So thank you for sharing that. Let's go over to Iqaluit. So that's Trevor and or Kumanakik, however you want, whoever wants to jump in first.
Okay. Kumanakik. Yes, my name is Kumangati Angatia, and I am the recreation coordinator for the municipality of Iqaluit. And my sweaty palm issue is that there are more frequent increase in seizures within the community after the pandemic.
Wow, that's hard because people are probably coming in your facilities, and you need to know if that's happening more frequently. That's a challenge to deal with. So hopefully you guys find out what's behind all that. So thanks for sharing that, Kumnapik. Trevor's posted in the chat that he's the arena supervisor in Iqaluit, and his sweaty palm issue was when he just returned to his job before the hockey tournament, and the arena wasn't ready because there's hazards to look after. So absolutely. Thanks for sharing that, Trevor. Sometimes we have, something, an event or something going on, and yet there's hazards, so it's not safe for people to be there. And you're trying to, they all want to be there, but you have to sort things out. So thanks, Trevor. We're going to go to Trista, and she's popped in the chat, so I'll read what she said. And then, Sherry, we're going to come back around to you, and then next time we'll start with somebody different in our circle. So Trista is from Ignace, Ontario, and she says her sweaty palm issue is high-risk events like sliding because it's or tobogganing, if you want to call it something else, because it's hard to control how fast or which direction they go. And somewhere like the Yukon, we also have trees. You might not have those in Nunavut, but you might have rocks and things like that. So Trista also mentioned that she has a gas leak at their recreation complex, so she might have to jump out. So, all sorts of things going on today, so thank you. Okay, and around to you, Sherry.
All right, so Sherry from Haines Junction. I'm the real leader for cross-country skiing with children kindergarten to grade 7 once a week. And so my sweaty palm is similar with Jed, kind of the older group, the 6-7, where you get a few more strong participants and some lagging not so participants. So you become that divided attention. I do have another adult there with me at the same time, but that kind of, you might get spaced out if you're going for a ski, or even some that don't want to go. So just kind of managing the whole group, making it fun for everyone, but also managing what can happen when you have 2 supervisors and 23 kids and some who want to join and some who don't.
Yeah, that's a challenge for sure. And Peter's just popped in the chat that it's like a slinky for your group, so it starts to stretch out a little bit.
Yeah.
That's a good way of thinking about it. Thank you. So thanks for sharing, everybody. As you can see, like, we all sort of experience, we have different sweaty palm issues. We might think of different things in our work. So really, the way that we experience and respond to risk in our home life, but also in our work life, is very personal and individualized. So what I mean by that is that 2 people in the same organization might think of risk differently. So one of you might think of, like in Iqaluit, for example, maybe Trevor's thinking about the hazards in the facility, whereas Kuminalpic is thinking of the people and what might happen. And you might see those different risks. So sometimes it's hard. So it's a really important conversation to have with people that you work with about managing risk. The other reason I know that we all respond a bit differently is you've answered sort of in activity one how you feel about risk, and most of you said that you enjoy moderate risk. So 5 people said that. 4 people said you don't mind a bit of risk. 2 people said they're uneasy with risk, and 1 person isn't willing to take risk. So I've also had people say extreme risk is thrilling, or I like risk more than most people. So from that activity, you can see that we all sort of look at risk and feel about risk a little differently. So that's why it's really important to have a process that we're going to follow. So although the risk, like what could happen, and the types of damages or injuries or things that could occur are unique to each situation, the process that we use to manage risk is the same. So what we want to do, if in the slides, you might have seen that slides 8 to 14, and also the activity number 2, which hopefully worked for you. It only works on a computer, not on a phone. Introduced you to 3 basic concepts and 5 areas of risk. So I just want to touch on those a little bit just so that we're all on the same page, and then we're going to talk through them a little bit more. So on slide number 8, there's a couple of terms there that are really important. So the idea of 4C ability, and if you pull that word apart, it's just being able to see that something bad might happen and act in a way that stops that bad thing from happening. So, you know, if you think of a little child or a toddler, I have a granddaughter who's almost 14 months, and she hasn't learned what's risky yet, right? She doesn't know not to walk behind the quad in the driveway or something like that, whereas I do. So we need to, in recreation, be able to think about what might happen and try and make sure that something really bad doesn't happen. The other thing, concept to think about is rating risk or risk rating. And really that's how do we measure that level of risk? Do we use our gut instinct or numbers? And that's really important because some of you might have a supervisor or volunteers or staff who don't see risk the same way as you do. So if you can talk about how you rate risk with them, it might be easier to address those potential risks. And then the third thing that's really important to take away from this is the idea of risk controls. So it's a control means that you figure out what you can do to take action to reduce those risks. So I'm going to come back to what Trevor said about the arena not being ready and all the hazards. You know, maybe some of the hazards aren't so bad, like maybe it's a bathroom that's not working, so you can put a sign up and say the bathroom's closed. But if it's something like the ice isn't safe, then the way that you control that would be to probably cancel or postpone the tournament. So there's different risk controls that we use. So on slide 9, if you had a chance to look at that, you would see that there's 5 areas that we have to think of when we think of risk. And I think we're really good at thinking about things like supervision and instruction. How many teenagers are in your program? Do you need 1 or 2 assistants for that? We're also really good about thinking about our facilities. Is our arena safe? Is the car safe or the van safe or things like that? But sometimes we don't always think about some of the other areas that we need to look at, which are things like training and documentation or paperwork or writing things down or emergency response planning. So what we're going to do together as a group, and you may or may not have this open, at the top of the learning event, right next to where you found the link for the slides, there's a link that says RM101 handouts. So if you happen to have opened those handouts, you would go to page number 2 that says scenario review template. If you don't have that in front of you, don't worry about it, because I know that everybody has something to share or contribute to this next part of our conversation. Where you would also find that is if you've had the presentation slides, is the picture is also shown on slide 21. But I'll talk you through this. So what we're going to do as a group, and I'm going to put, Peter, you're going to be at the top of our circle this time. So I'm going to put you on the spot. I'll tell you the question in a minute. So we're going to go through these five key areas of risk using a scenario, and I'll tell you what the scenario is. And we're going to think about what could happen, and that's foreseeability. So what I want you to do is, first of all, is after I read you the scenario, tell me one thing. Please don't say too many because everybody needs a turn to go around. Tell me one bad thing that you think might happen in this situation. And then we're going to come back and try and figure out what we could do to address that. So just one thing again, and here's the question for you. Let me just pop it in the chat so that you have it, and I'll put the scenario in there too. So if you can't think of one thing, that's okay. You can say pass as well. Remember, pass is just as good to say as sharing something. So imagine that you have an after-school program going on in your playground. So I'm guessing this is probably summer, not winter, if we're doing it in the playground. And you have 15 children in that program. And there's only one youth supervisor, and they don't have any first aid training. What could go wrong? So this is a quick round. Just tell me one thing, Peter, and then we'll go to Nathan and then Isabel. One thing that could go wrong, Peter.
One of the children get injured.
Okay, so there could be an injury. That's great.
Yes.
And if we run out of ideas, no big deal. So, Nathan, is there something else that could go wrong? So, Peter said injury.
If someone gets hurt, they could get sued.
Yeah, so there could be a lawsuit. Exactly. So that could also be wrong, something that goes wrong. Good. Okay, Isabel, is there anything else that you think of that could go wrong?
I think there's a lot that can go wrong in this situation.
Okay.
But there was one of the youth runs away. There's no one
waiting
for it and no one else to stay back with the group.
Yeah, so one of the kids wanders off, right? Exactly, good. Okay, we're going to go to, from Isabel, we're going to go to Aglubic. And then Trista, if you're still around and you want to pop in the chat, you can. And then we'll go Sherry, Jed, and Guyanne. And you may run out of what could go wrong. So don't worry if you run out. Just say pass. So Kamenopic or Trevor, can you see anything else that might go wrong in that situation?
We're out.
You're out. Okay. Do you guys ever have polar bears wandering through your community?
Around fall.
Okay, so that would be a pretty bad thing that went wrong if you had 15 children in a playground, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, so we could just, because we all live in the north, we could say that maybe there's some wildlife that comes in. It might be a moose that in the fall, or we have coyotes and things like that. So maybe we have a wildlife issue, right? That could go wrong. So thank you, Trevor and Kamenopic. Trista, I'll let you pop in the chat if you can think of anything else. Terry, how about yourself? I know you're with a school, so is there anything else that could go wrong in that situation?
Well, I'm thinking of a few things. I'll put out the one where someone gets a bee sting and an anaphylactic reaction.
Ah, so the difference to an injury, right? So a bee sting, that's right. And you only have one use with no first aid training. Great. Okay, Jed, is there anything else that you think that could go wrong in this situation?
There could be a dispute or a fight between some of the participants.
Yeah, because there's 15 of them, right? And one use supervising them. Excellent. Trevor's put in there could be a bit of panic, like this if a polar bear wanders by, the kids might panic. So that's excellent. Thanks, Trevor. Gian, is there anything else that you can see that might go wrong in that situation?
Yeah, there's lots of, like, when the kids on the playground, there is lots of possibility that they get injured, and then the situation can be settled also. The kid can, like, anything can happen, right? So CPR is needed and this stuff, so, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks. And the other thing that could happen is with 15 children and only one supervisor, maybe there's some equipment there that could get broken or damaged, something like that, too. So it's not just always about injury to yourself or to the participants, but it could be to the things that you're using, too. That's great. So that gives you a bit of an idea that maybe this isn't such a great situation. So now we're going to go around again, and I'm going to ask you a concern. So actually, I'm going to change my question a little bit. I'm going to ask you what you might be able to do to improve the situation. So how could we make it less likely, and I'll just type this in as I'm saying it, how could we make it less likely that something goes wrong? So let's start with, I'm going to start with you, Isabel, just so that we vary our order. So we're going to go from Isabel to Aglulik to Trista, Sherry, Jed, Jan, Peter, and Nathan. So how could we make it less likely that something goes wrong? What could we do differently? So over to you, Isabel. Just one thing so that everybody can share something.
I think I'll solve the biggest problem is I would add another leader with a trained first aid.
Okay, so that's two things almost. So add another leader is one, and then add first aid training.
Sorry, I didn't express myself properly. I meant like one leader that has a first aid training.
Okay, so we want to make sure that the person has
first aid. One person, yes.
One person has first aid training. Perfect. Okay, so first aid training is what Isabel said. Trevor or Kumanopic, what would you do to improve that situation?
Just like the schools have a code, either by color, by numbers, or by things, code red, code blue, code 1 for low risk, code 7 for high risk.
That's great. And that relates to sort of having an emergency response plan. So having a way that you identify when something isn't good, right? So that's great. That would be an emergency response plan. Thanks for that. Trevor, if you want to pop something in the chat, you can. Or you can just agree with what Kumanopic said. And Trista, I think you might not be still there, so you can go ahead and pop in the chat. Sherry, what is something that you would do to improve that situation, to make it less likely that something goes wrong?
Yeah, I think there's just quite a few things, but I think maybe with that youth leader, even if they don't have the first aid training, because Isabel's taking care of that, but they just have some training with the dynamics of handling, being with youth, so forced to be able to handle things like small fights or small injuries or setting up the parameter, like a parameter of we can play within this area because there's only one of me if there is only one. So some mainly training, some for that young youth.
Yeah, so some type of group management, leadership type training so that they have a better understanding. Thanks, Sherry. Jed, how about yourself? What else do you think we could probably do to make it less likely that something goes wrong in this situation?
Beforehand, we could have maybe organized it to have a smaller group of children.
Yeah, that's great. Like, accept fewer registrations, right? If you only have one leader, don't take 15 kids. Very good. Thanks, Jess. Gian, what's something else that we could do to make it less likely that something goes wrong?
So from the group only, we can make a group of five, and then we can make a group leader into the group also. So that can help to organize the group better.
Right. Okay. So are you saying add another group leader then? Is that what you meant?
From the students only, we can make the captains or the leaders. Yeah.
So have out of the participants, have somebody be a leader out of the participants.
Yeah, let's say we have 15 kids, so we can make three teams, A, B, C, and then so one of the kids will be the captain or the leader of that group, and, you know, so it will help a bit to organize and building the team activity also, and, yeah.
That's great. Yeah, good idea. So basically, just to what Gian's saying is split the 15 kids into three groups of five, and out of there maybe have three older children, one in each group, that have some responsibility for that team. So kind of like a buddy system, but a little bit bigger than a buddy system. So thanks. Good idea. Trista's put emergency backpack packed with supplies and first aid in case there's an emergency. So that would be your emergency response plan as well. And Peter, we'll go to you, and then Nathan. What is something that we could do to improve that situation?
Well, if it was the last minute, you could change the programming to be less risky. Like, maybe they could just do some quiet activity inside rather than play on the playground outside. But,
okay, so if you change the space that they're in, right? Like, so that would be looking at facilities and equipment. Can we change the space? Or as somebody else said, can you make the playground space smaller? Like, they're only allowed in this area, not the whole playground. Or move them inside. So, excellent. Thanks, Peter. And Nathan, is there something else? I know there's been lots of ideas, but can you think of something else that might make it less likely that something goes wrong?
I can't really think of anything new. The main thing I can think of is plan. Just plan for every contingency if possible.
Yeah, and that's a really good point that nobody's mentioned. I'm looking at the slide that has five key risk areas. So plan, to me, comes under documentation. So it's write it down. Write down what you're going to do, who's going to be there, write your emergency response, what to do if there's an emergency. So that all comes under documentation. So that is something else that we haven't mentioned. So thank you. Thank you for that, Nathan. The other thing that came to my mind is if it's a playground near, like outside of school, you can make sure that that youth leader had like a cell phone and there was an adult contact or something like that as well. So you can see from your answers then that there's lots of different things that can go wrong, but there's also lots of ways that we can plan, as Nathan said, to improve the situation so it's less likely that something goes wrong. And that's really all we're trying to do with risk. You can never, ever get rid of every single risk. It's risky just me getting out of bed in the morning. So I can't remove all risks, but we need to be able to manage risk so it's less likely that something bad happens. So I just want to touch on the five key areas that are on slide. They're shown on slide, what number is that, 9, and then they're described on the following slides. So it's, some of you mentioned supervision and instruction. So for supervision, you're talking about, Deanne, you mentioned dividing kids into smaller groups. Isabel mentioned first aid, but also another leader as well. So how many leaders do we need for how many participants? Nathan, you mentioned writing down things. So when we instruct or teach something, we want to make sure that we actually write down or have like a lesson plan or an activity plan like we did a couple of learning events ago. If you think about it, generally your higher risk programs and facilities and people require supervision with specific qualifications. So what I mean by that is if you have a swimming pool or a swimming facility, you might need lifeguards and instructors that are certified. A higher skill or higher risk activity like gymnastics might need more supervisors And kids programs or overnight camps might need more supervisors as well. And if you had a playground, imagine a playground. Some of you might have been imagining a small playground, or some of you a very big one with, you know, places where kids can hide and you can't even see them. So that changes everything too. The next one area that we want to consider is training. So Isabel mentioned first aid training. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that we know what training is needed and who needs to be trained. So as Isabel mentioned, one person with first aid training. We don't necessarily need everybody with it, but one person should have it. On slide 12, it talks about documentation. So things like if you're taking kids on a trip, do you have some medical information? Do you know if maybe they might have anaphylactic shock or be allergic to bee stings and need to use an EpiPen? So having things written down like registration forms, who do you call if you have 15 kids and there's an emergency? Let's see. I've got somebody with their hand up. Is that you, Kian?
So, talking about the previous point, we can do one more thing to avoid the injuries, which is we can talk about the youth leader can talk about the safety point whenever he's or she is starting the session.
That's right. So you can give an overview, you can work that into the beginning of your session for sure. That's great,
yep.
Thanks. Awesome, that worked well to do the hand raise. I don't know how long I've been up, but it did catch my attention. So if you press star 2, it will put it down again. Thank you. Okay, so facilities and equipment. Trevor, you mentioned, you know, things having hazards in your arena or things that you were worried about. And definitely you need to maintain and inspect your facilities and your equipment. So if you're running a cross-country ski program, you got to make sure that your skis are safe too and the bindings and things like that. And you might want to also write down the checks that you do regularly using some type of checklist. So I've checked the bathrooms today. I've checked the ice surface. I've checked, you know, that the lights are working. I've checked that the smoke alarm's working. Anything like that is really helpful. I've checked the equipment that we're using before the activity. And then the last area is emergency response plans. So if you think that somebody might get hurt, and it's possible, which it probably is possible most of the time, we want to make sure that we know what we're going to do in an emergency. So Kumanopic, you mentioned having different codes, and I imagine that those codes, depending on what the color is or what type of code it is, you might respond differently to each one. I don't know if you want to jump in and explain quickly how you do respond to different codes or if I'm correct in what I'm thinking.
Okay, like, let's see, if it were a small risk, like a cut on a finger, maybe light color, or if it needs CPR or assistance with helper, maybe a darker color. If not, from code 1, from the lowest risk to code 10, with the highest risk, and categorize each number and have a plan to do something for each number, something like that.
That's really great. Like I just imagine, especially in a small community, you know, I used to live in small communities and the fire hall alarm would go off if there was a big emergency. But you know, having, separating it into different levels so that you know who is going to respond and what they're going to do. I think that's a really helpful thing, and that can go beyond recreation. Like if you have kids in recreation, kids in schools, and the school uses the same process as the recreation facility uses, now everybody understands what has to happen in an emergency. So emergency response planning is another area where we have to think about it. So, for sure. And also know that, you know, your phones are working and things like that too. So we're going to take a quick look at the first step in a risk management process. And this is on slide 15 if you have it. And again, it says, we can't get rid of every risk, but we can reduce the chance that something's going wrong. So the way that our process is we look at what the risks are, and we rate them. We give them a number, or we use a color or something like that to say how bad or not so bad the risk is. And then what we want to do is look at where issues and gaps are. So what are we missing? Did we miss the fact that we need to do training for people? Did we miss the fact that, you know, a facility needs some repairs or something like that? And then we create an action plan that helps us reduce the impact of risk. Another way of sort of thinking about it is to think of risk by programs, facilities, and people. So you can, as slide 17 shows, you can use sort of your gut instinct or your feelings to rate risk. So remember, though, that we don't all rate risk the same way. So, you know, if I say the risk in this activity is a 5, somebody else might say it's a 7, and somebody else might say it's a 3. So you want to just be aware that using your gut instinct might give different numbers. Another way we can do it, and this is on slide 19, is we can actually use numbers. So when we use numbers, we're going to look at the probability or likelihood. So what are the chances that something's going to go wrong? And we give that a number on a scale of 1 to 5. And then we look at, if something does go wrong, how bad is it going to be on a scale of 1 to 5? Then we times those two numbers together to get our risk rating. So what I want you guys to do, I don't know if you all have a pen and paper in front of you, or you can do this in your head, and I'm going to step you through it, and then I'll just ask a couple of people to share afterwards. So I want you to think of an activity. It might be the teenagers that you have. It might be the gym situation. It might be transportation. Think of something in your mind or a program you're running. And I want you to think, what is the chances of something going wrong? So the ones that I've chosen on this slide are a chess tournament. So people are playing chess. The chance that something goes wrong is really low, so I gave it a 1. But tackle football or something like that, or, you know, I've got the chances of something going wrong with that are probably a 4, because it's much more, it's faster, people are jumping on each other, things like that. So just decide in your mind, what is the chance of something going wrong for what you're thinking of in your mind? And either write that number down, or because we're doing it 1 to 5, you can put it on one hand. You can put the number of fingers up on one hand. And then what I would like you to do is now think of, if something does go wrong, what's the severity or how bad will it be? So a bleeding nose isn't the same as a concussion. A broken baseball bat isn't the same as an ice plant that's broken, or a massive swimming pool leak. So there's lots of different things. So think about the severity or how bad it would be if something did happen. So my example in chess is, you know, if you're playing chess, what are you going to do? Maybe sprain a finger or drop a chess thing or fall off your chair. So the severity, I put 1. So I have a 1 and a 1 for chess, and I go 1 times 1, and I get 1, so my risk rating is really low. But with tackle football, I said if something goes wrong, it could be really serious, and I might have a 4, so I go 4 times 4, and that gives me 16, which is a high level of risk. So I'm just going to go around. You don't have, we just have about 8 minutes left on my clock, and so I'm just wondering if really quickly you can tell me what you were thinking about and what risk rating you came up with when you took on the scale of 1 to 5 for how the chances of something happening and 1 to 5 with the severity. So, Sherry, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you if you'd like to share first. Just tell us what it is and what number you came up with.
Sure. On our playground where we ski, there's a small hill. So a little accident on that hill could occur occasionally. So I put that kind of at a 3, and that's being a bit high. But, and then so far as injury, maybe a 1, like there could be a small injury, so it's not a very high risk, a 1 or a 2, so even at a 6 would be considered a low risk.
Great, so 3 to 6, somewhere in that range. Thanks, Sherry. Jed, how about yourself? What did you come up with? What were you thinking of, and what was your risk rating?
I also thought of a ski program that we're doing, and I came up with a 6, too, with the...
Awesome. So that's interesting. You and Sherry are both thinking skiing, and you both have a similar level of risk for skiing program. So that's great. That means you're sort of thinking along the same lines. Okay, we're going to go to Gian, then Peter, then Nathan. So Gian, what were you thinking of, and what was your risk rating?
So I'm thinking about the squash session, and one of the kid, he was not wearing the eye protected glass. So
yeah.
That's really very risky for the eyes. I would give it rating out of 5, like 4. Like kid can lose his eyes also if they're not wearing the protected glass.
And so how, okay, so the severity is a 4, but how likely is it that kids are going to be allowed to play squash without eye protection?
It's not allowed.
Okay.
Because
so probably
somebody's under 19, they're not allowed in the in any of the events. Like, they can't play.
So the probability or likelihood would probably be a 1, but if somebody was to take their glasses off or whatever and somebody hit the ball at the same time, it would be really bad, so it would be a 4. So maybe 1 times 4 gives you a 4?
That's right.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for explaining that.
Thank you.
Peter, then Nathan, then Isabel. So, Peter, over to you. What were you thinking about, and what risk rating did you come up with?
I was thinking about this youth strength training program I run at the CGC, and I would say the severity is based on the stuff that I teach them. I don't teach them the card list, but it would be like maybe a 4. But the probability would probably only be like a 2 or a 3. So that's like 8 to 12 on the scale. Maybe.
Okay.
It's probably 6. Would be like a moderate level of risk.
Awesome. And it's probably because they're doing that in a program, right? If they were doing that on their own, like you said, you're worried about people doing stuff on their own and not listening to any instructions, then the probability would probably be a lot higher, right?
Yeah, people just using the weights in the gym without any knowledge is probably more like a 4 and a 5.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see how doing the same activity in a program with somebody who's trained to deliver that program versus doing that activity by yourself, the risk is very different.
Yeah.
Thanks, Peter. Over to you, Nathan. Do you have an activity or something in mind that you were thinking about, and did you come up with a risk rating?
Hey, Cam. All right, can you guys hear me?
I can hear you now, yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
The only thing I can think of is like the summer day camp we have, and we let the kids go out just outside the community. We call it the three tunnels. It's three culverts where baby fish go to the lake, But anyway, we let the kids go grab baby fish and then bring like a little aquarium. But probability is like one side of town. It's like a quarter mile outside of town. But the severity, you know, you will see the occasional fox or something. So I bring a truck just in case there's wildlife. So I don't know. I'd give it a 4 or 5.
Yeah, so 4 or 5 overall. Because, you know, also if the kids fell in and got wet and you're still like however far and it's a cold day, that, you know, there's the risk of hypothermia too, right?
Yeah, so, but very low risk, though.
They must love doing that. That's so great, and then you bring them back and make an aquarium. Thanks, Nathan. Okay, Isabel, how about for yourself? Did you have something in mind, and did you come up with a risk rating?
Yes, so we do have a wonderful game and work that's called Archery Tag. So you play tag, but with a bow and arrow, and you wear a face mask. But it's quite risky. It's a fun game. So I came up with the risk level of 8.
Awesome. And it's probably 8 because you have things in place to control that risk, like face mask. If they weren't wearing proper gear, the risk would be higher. Perfect. Thanks, Isabel.
Of course.
Trevor and Kumanopic, do you have an activity that comes to mind, and did you come up with a risk rating? And you might be still muted. I can't hear you. Sorry.
Hollywood 6.
So, what was the activity that you came up with as a stick?
Hockey. Community hockey.
Community hockey. Okay. Would that be on an inside rink or outside rink?
Inside.
Okay. And a 6 because, like, is it a 2 or a 3? How likely is it that somebody gets hurt playing community hockey?
Is your party?
Do you get lots of injuries when people are playing hockey, or not too bad?
Quite a few people get hurt a lot.
And are they really bad injuries that you have to send them out of the community, or are they usually ones that get fixed within your community?
Yeah, one time we had someone had to go to city for medical.
Yeah, so you probably are at a, like your probability is probably about a 3, and then the severity is probably about a 3 as well. So you're probably at about a 9 for that, I would think. That's a good one, because I think just about everybody has hockey in their community. So good to think through that one as well. So thank you, Kumnopic. And Krista, if you're still on the call and wanted to pop something in the chat, that's great. But I wanted to wrap up our call there. I'm sorry it shows 1 minute after the hour on my clock. So I think that was a great conversation, and I really appreciate you contributing to it. You do have a required learning activity that's due on Sunday, and what that is that's to do a risk rating, which you just did on the phone. So you can use what you just shared today, or you can think of something else. And what there is I just want you to do it in 2 ways. So you're going to tell us sort of what the activity or program is, like you just did. You're going to tell us what some of the risks are that could lead to that. So there's a hill, they take their eye protection off, they lift too much weight, they fall in the cold water. So what are those risks? And then you're going to figure out sort of what the risk zone is, or your gut instinct, using one slide, and then you're going to measure it like you just did. So if you're not quite sure how to do it, there's some handouts on pages 3 and 4. And you can also, I've got some examples of how other people have done this one. So you can click and take a look for an example as well. And you can always reach out to me if you need any help with that required learning activity that's due on Sunday. So next week, we're going to look a bit more at the next two steps of risk management. And I hope that everybody has a safe day. I hope that in your communities where it's really cold today, you guys stay warm and don't have any weather-related incidents or things go wrong. So if you have any questions, can you just stay on the line after I stop the conference call recording? Otherwise, thank you very much. Merci, merci, cho, nakermik, Juana, and have a wonderful afternoon, and I look forward to reading your activity and talking to you next week.